Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.16, where we're out here just easily replacing Olympians. One of the bigger things of note for me from this weekend was after the Saturday game, we had gotten into conversations about some things, and you brought up the fact that you have a smoking jacket.
Okay.
And I think that the viewers are going to need to hear about this, viewers and listeners. One day we'll do a video cast, but they're going to need this information. We already have had a request from someone else in the room for you to elaborate on this, and
no, it's not. It's an old joke. I don't actually have a smoking jacket.
So this was a ruse.
That's what my parents would always call like any bathrobe that like particularly was not like super fluffy, right? That looks more like. And I had a couple of those as a little kid, and so they would call that a smoking jacket. And then I like to throw that out there to keep the crowd off guard at social events. So,
is the crowd usually on guard? So you don't even have a smoking jacket?
Not currently, no.
But is it in the works?
I mean, you could go out and buy one.
Have you encountered smoking jackets in the past?
Yeah, I knew people that were older that had them.
Okay.
I mean, it's not really a thing a lot of people nowadays have, but...
Yeah, but you watch movies from the 40s.
Sure.
That's also not something that a lot of people our age in our days tend to do.
I don't think we're the same age.
You don't?
No, I don't.
So you also think I'm younger than you? We're just kind of trying to find other things to talk about in some way because... if you've watched one of these hockey games that Michigan played Michigan State, you probably can assume both of them. I mean, we don't need to dig too much into Michigan State is bad, but they are.
They're really bad. That's kind of the shocking thing about watching this past weekend was just like, wow, they are really bad. And especially because...
Is there another team on the schedule that you would compare them to of any in any way?
Well, the only series that looked like that is Niagara.
Is Michigan State? Is this where we're at?
No, but I mean, that first Niagara game was more competitive for a while than either of these were. I mean, that first Niagara game, right? The goalie was standing on his head for like the first 30 minutes. That didn't really happen in either of these games. I mean, Michigan was up only 1-0 after the first period on Friday, but that game never felt really competitive at all, especially because then the avalanche of goals came in the second period and then it was whatever 5-0 by the end of that. So I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things. I mean, we were on the other show yesterday, which maybe you're listening to today or tomorrow or
yesterday.
There are no days anymore. Podcasts are consumed randomly. Someone's probably listening to this in 2027. So, anyway, point is, when I was on the show, whenever that was, I was talking about how Danton Cole probably should be on the chopping block because so he's been at MSU, 5 years now? And like the first couple of years were promising. They were improving over what they had been under Tom Anastas, right? And trending in the right direction. And then you say, okay, let's get the players in here, right? Let's get the guys in here who are going to fuel the team back up with talent. And you look at 2019-2020, they were 5-19-2, which is, you know, pretty solid. 11-11-2 in the Big Ten. That was his third season. They climbed out of the cellar. They got into sixth place in the conference. And after year three is when your recruits should start showing up, right? That's when they started showing up for Mel. And instead, they've gone backwards. I mean, 7-18-2 last year, and now they've lost, 10 straight games now in conference and just got caved in a way that is just unacceptable. especially against a team that has a shorthanded roster. But even not, you just can't let that happen. They give up 45 shots, it feels like, per game, at least, against them. I mean, DeRitter has a 922, but they still give up almost 3 goals per game because he faces so many shots. It's just not good enough. And it's year 5, and I don't really see any reason to believe that they're getting on the right track.
So the other part of that is that, you know, we didn't have a hockey cast last week, but Michigan State played Minnesota in a series, and I guess it was in Minneapolis, if I remember correctly, and they had a 2-0 lead in the first period, which is about as good as you're going to get for Michigan State. And then they tried to protect it and were kind of able to for a period and a half or so. And once it got into the third, Minnesota just overwhelmed them. And I guess the point I'm trying to say with this is, what are you trying to do, like, in the hockey game? Well, get a lead and protect it. Well, you can't. So you can't go out and skate and score goals because there's no one on the team that really does that. So then you find a way to get a lead, and then you try to protect yourself via siege, and that doesn't work either. So it's not like you're working on things that you're going to be good at in the future. Like, there's not really anything to build on, is there? I mean, players or systems or anything. I mean, because that's the thing, right? It's like, oh, we're going to run our system, and once guys get good at it, they, you know, they're going to get better. Or, you know, once these guys get better, then the players are going to be good and they're going to carry us. Or, you know, any of these things. There hasn't been anything like that. And even in the last half of a season, like, well, I mean, they haven't won a game. So,
well, so the thing is, it's worth remembering, Danton Cole went 23-59-12 at Huntsville in 3 seasons there. Which, look, you know, Huntsville is not really America's premier hockey program, but they were not very good in his time there. They did get into the tournament his last season. They did improve over his previous 2 years there, but they got into the tournament at 12-18-3 because they won an auto bid through their conference tournament, which, okay, and then they lost the first game of the tournament because they were a sub-500 team. Yeah. And then he spent time with the USNTDP, but I mean, the guy now, you look at his total coaching record in his career is well below 40% win percentage as a career head coach in college. And look, I get that he played at MSU, he played in the NHL. There was a lot of reason to be hopeful, but his resume wasn't exactly Bob Motzko. His resume was not exactly Mel Pearson in terms of like, well, this guy's gotten a real program to the tournament decently consistently. There was nothing like that on their resume. And 5 years in, it doesn't, I don't know, doesn't seem to be working to me.
Yeah.
I mean, they've lost 11 of 14 to Michigan, 9 of 10, 4 straight duel in the D, possibly going to finish last in the conference for the 4th time in 5 seasons. I mean, there's just nothing to really be happy about.
Yeah.
1 year of Taro Hirose, John Letheman.
Oh, one man. Year. Well, they've had goalies, so I think that whatever, like, you, for whatever reason, they're able to continue that going, but so what if you don't get any goals? We should get into the games a little bit, hit some of the highlights at least. You know, the first period we talked about was kind of the first game was the only real period that Michigan State was kind of able to skate with Michigan. And you didn't really think as much, but Michigan didn't really dominate that period, at least on the scoreboard, as much as the ensuing periods will.
I mean, Michigan hit the post a few times in that period. And look, I'm not I'm not like some people online that's like, oh, well, we hit the post 4 times and the goalie made 4 great saves. We could have scored 10 goals. No. That's not how it works.
Hitting the post is also hitting the post.
You're never going to convert anywhere close to 100% of your A-plus chances at any convincing amount of time, right? Maybe in one game you can go 3 for 3 on your A-plus chances. But point is, goalies are good enough. They're going to make some saves. But Michigan still was considerably the better team. I mean, I tweeted after that first period, just keep the car on course.
Right.
It was a lot better. They got a lot of good chances. Just keep doing that and the goals will come. And then they did.
And the goal that came in that period was from Jacob Truscott, who I believe it was off of a rebound that Pasta got a good look. And it's good to see Truscott get on the board because he had a nice start to the year and hasn't really done a whole lot since. He had that really bad penalty in Minnesota that maybe cost them a point or so. But he had a really nice weekend, and it started sort of with this chance where he puts a rebound goal. And that's not really something that we've seen from him. He's usually sitting at the point, taking a shot here on he's crashing the net. Cause they sort of had a 3-on-2 in the zone, and he was rewarded for getting to the front.
Yeah. He sensed that play pretty well, slid down. I mean, that was a segment in the first period, you could say, where Michigan was starting to really assert themselves and take chances offensively, and he was in the right place and got that big rebound that kicked out on the left side of the crease and finished it off. And at that point, you're like, okay, we got the one goal, and now we just got to keep playing in the second period.
Yeah, and the second period was something else. More what you kind of, I don't know if you, to say expected, but it just kind of kept going, and Michigan kept hitting threes from like a basketball perspective, even though you don't get more points for those goals. They're just shooting from distance and making everything. So Michigan gets their second power play opportunity, and Hughes just rifles one off the post from distance on the left point. And within minutes, Samuskevich does the same thing from the opposite side. And Nolan Moyle does it too from sort of the top of the house. And Michigan is, I couldn't see if those were particularly bad goals from DeRitter, but I mean, they were just cashing everything they were shooting from the point.
There was a lot of 2000s power play goals in this period where, you know, I was thinking about this recently when I was watching some footage of late 90s games and kind of remembering my childhood and stuff, where for some reason, NHL teams for like a 15-year period thought it was a good idea on the power play to just staple two defensemen to the blue line and have that be like a core component. I mean, really, 2D on the power play was very common throughout a lot of the 90s and 2000s. And
sure,
if you think about like a lot of the power play goals the Red Wings would score when they had those great power plays throughout the dynasty, a lot of them were, you know, the Lidstrom blast from the point through like five bodies, including Holmstrom standing directly in front of the goalie. And that's what these goals were, right? Blast from the point, and they got great screens from Estapa and also screens from like four other players.
including Spartans.
Yeah, I mean, seeing eye shots, those are just classic 2000s power play goals, right? Not high percentage looks, not what in today's game you would draw up as the looks you want, but sometimes the seeing eye shot gets through. I mean, the story about this period is, it's played entirely in Michigan State's half of the ice. It's the entirely in their defensive zone plus the center line to the blue line, right? Occasionally MSU would chip it out, they'd get a change, and then get right back in. And as a result, they take a bunch of penalties, and Michigan gets three power play goals because they've got unlimited offensive zone time in this period. I mean, it's just, again, just cannot be happening. In year five of a coach, I don't care, year one of a coach. Unless you're a Niagara, right? A mid-major against a really good team. If you're in the same conference, you just cannot have that. I don't know what the shot attempts were in the second period, but they had to have been a horrifying number. I mean, it had to have been like 25-2 or something. I mean, I can't even remember.
They had two.
Okay.
That was it. So you got it.
That can't happen. It just cannot happen.
Not in that period. Like if, you know, in the first period where a team has some jump or something, or in the third period when the game is already over and things are already exaggerated. But, you know, coming into the second period, you know, the game was still in doubt. It was only 1-0 and you get two chances.
I mean, that's what we said earlier this year, right? Or back early in the season when MSU was around 500 and they notched a couple non-conference wins. I was the one on this show saying repeatedly, like, no, they're not a serious team. Call me when they're not getting outshot 60-30 in every game. Like, you cannot be a real contender for anything when you're being outshot like that in every game.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that, I think, is because they couldn't get out of the zone. That's why they kept taking penalties, right? Is like, you're always chasing, and then Michigan's taking advantage of it. And, you know, the thing that was nice to see from Michigan is that, you know, it wasn't being driven by their four Olympians, right? Like, it's still everybody else on the team. So you're not sitting there and being like, all right, Matty Beniers or Kent Johnson, whoever, you know, go make something happen. And it was like all of the depth guys included and the kids. Like, that's what you want to see. Is I thought Sam Moscovich and Duke both had pretty good weekends. Beecher played well. And like, that's such a key line for Michigan going forward, especially when you start playing against good teams that might be able to shut down a line or two. And then you got like Lambert was getting chances and Pasta and like all of like the key role players that when those guys are not only scoring, but contributing in other ways and playing well, like this team is just, they're more than just a bunch of stars. You become like a, in some ways, a unbeatable hockey team on other than, you know, random stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, this game, you go into the third period and even halfway through the third period, Portillo's saved what, 15 shots, something like that in this game up to that point is, and none of them are high percentage looks.
No,
it's a Chris Osgood shutout, as you might call it, in terms of being asked to do nothing and just biding your time in net. And then every so often making a B percent, you know, B chance save. And then they pull him out and Levy comes in. And that's kind of all you need to know about this game is like Jack Levy played and Michigan
so that's
won. That tells you what the complexion was.
That's the last couple of things that we should address in this game is one. Have you heard Portillo laugh at a game?
No.
Okay. So he whoops and giggles. And like, if when you see one of the Michigan's defensemen, like deke somebody out in their zone as they're leaving, or, you know, there's a big play or whatever, you can just hear him and it's super audible. He must have like one of the loudest voices on the team. One time I could hear him from the south end, cause I sit up at the north end and he's just, it just sounds like he's having a good time. And, you know, goalies are supposed to communicate right to your defense when you're calling things out and everything. But like, this is, this is him just like having these, I don't know what to call it. Like just these like whooping war cries almost that he's like yelling at his players and laughing when somebody falls down and gets in someone's face. It's entertaining. And then, so he leaves. And so he gets his quote unquote shutout of like what, 2.5 periods. And then Jack Levy gets to play and he didn't play well, I wouldn't say, but it was cool for him that he got to get some ice time at Yost. And that was, I believe, his first recorded minutes in a Michigan sweater.
Yeah. Finally getting to play in a regular season game. So
yeah,
that's always nice. It's kind of the Portillo thing kind of reminds me of, you know, how Keith Yandel always tells the goalie thank you every time the goalie settles the puck down behind the net. And circles behind and picks it up. Kind of like that.
That's pretty good. The last thing I wanted to say is that Nolan Moyle got a slashing penalty and there were jokes that abounded from that, which was fun. So that was not a particularly close game. And then Michigan moves to LCA to play game two. And you kind of wonder, all right, look, we know how this goes, right? You know that Michigan State isn't any good, but they still have the ability sometimes to get into that siege and goalie people. And then there's the rivalry factor and it's playing in an NHL arena. And I just hate counting chickens in that sense. But 90 seconds into the game, one of the Michigan State defensemen throws what's essentially a pick six as he's crossing his own blue line, passing it. And Sam Moscovich just slides right in there, picks the puck off, goes in on a breakaway, forehand, backhand. It's 1-0, 90 seconds in. Michigan gets a power play very soon after that. And nobody checks Dylan Duke in front. And he is able to get a couple of whacks at a puck and pokes it past DeRitter. It's 2-0. And the game has barely begun. And you're like, well, all of that like rivalry nonsense and, you know, intangible stuff pretty much goes out the window.
Yeah. I mean, it was the route is on again, pretty much.
Yeah. And there was really nothing else that happened in the second period. And you're kind of hoping that you can see this through. And then sort of the craziest 5-minute stretch that I ever really remember watching in hockey, especially in a power play or a penalty kill situation. But I guess we have to talk about this a little bit, but Marcus Stoppa takes yet another checking from behind into the boards, boarding, however you want to phrase it. And it's 5 in a game. And it wasn't really arguable. I mean, you and I were watching it together and we both were like, well, he's gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way the rule's been applied all year long.
And it hasn't changed, I don't think. neither is the enforcement of it. And now, like, I used to kind of get frustrated by it. And like when we were on the MGO podcast yesterday, you know, Brian's like kind of getting frustrated and was like, Michigan's been getting these deals all year and everything. And it, but, and there've been some of those, I'm not discounting that, but I would say five of the last six or six or seven of the last eight, they've just been probably the right call.
I mean, in terms of the way the rule is applied, they've been pretty obvious every time they happen.
And it doesn't happen to Michigan very often. And there aren't many times when I'm like, that's got to be a call against team X or team Y against Michigan. They just need to stop doing that, right? I mean, because against Michigan State, whatever, they probably could have had three or four guys ejected and it wouldn't have mattered. Well, at some point you're going to run into Western Michigan or Michigan State or Northeastern with their and their goalie and something, and you can't do that. That's a great way to lose a tournament game.
Well, I mean, even in this one, Michigan's up 2-0, and in theory, that sets up a small opportunity for
right.
MSU to get back into it.
Well, I mean, kind of, because Luke Hughes makes a really nice defensive play on the penalty kill, gets out of the zone. Jimmy Lambert's with him. It's a 2-on-1, hits him, boom, shorthanded goal, 3-0. Then while everyone's writing that note down or still cheering if you're at the game or watching it on TV, Mike Postyov makes a really nice play again to get the puck out. It gets out to Thomas Bortolo, who has a breakaway. He scores high over to Ritter, and it's 4-0. And Michigan gets two shorthanded goals in the same game for, I think, the first time since like early February of 2013, I think Christie was tweeting. And in the same penalty kill within like 90 seconds. So if this is just a 2-minute penalty, in theory, they still are able to do this. It's not because there was a really long penalty that they got one at the beginning at the end. It was basically back-to-back plays. So it's 4-0 after two shorthanded goals. And you're just like, well, I don't know if I've ever seen that. And then there's still time left. And Michigan State is able to tally twice, not just once.
Yeah, but and they were both kind of weird power play goals too, right?
Right.
Bouncing pucks, the one goes in off Keaton Pearson's back. So
right. Okay, 1.5.
Sure, right? Like, okay.
And then, you know, Portillo screened on the first one. And, you know, maybe he should have been able to avoid the screen if he moves a little better. It looked like his head was like ahead of his body. And maybe that's what happens when you're 6'6". I'm not really sure. But so it's 4-2. And you're kind of like, all right, is this a game again or is it not? And while you're thinking about that, Jimmy Lambert comes in like bird style and just swoops right across the entire defense, crosses the crease, lifts a puck high over to Ritter, and it's 5-2. And you're like, guess we're just playing without goalies tonight.
Yeah, that after a very sort of tidy narrative on Friday of just pure dominance, Saturday kind of got a little hectic there in the second period with just chances flying everywhere on that power play and then, you know, after it too.
Yeah, and I mean, Michigan State scores again then on, and this was probably, I would say, a goal that Portillo's going to want back. This was a shooter that came down kind of the wing and it hits him and he tries to dive on it and he like kind of fumbles it back towards his own net. And I think it was Truscott, either Truscott or Pearson, I can't remember which one, clears the puck out right to the initial shooter who just throws it back in. And, you know, that's unlucky for the guy trying to save the goal. It's unlucky that, you know, Portillo didn't control his rebound a little better maybe, but when you dive on it, it's sort of like when a linebacker or a lineman is going to pick up a fumble and they yep. just dive on it and the ball comes shooting out. You're like, you know, like,
yeah,
on.
That's always, it's always a classic. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's sick. And then it's, so it's what, 5-3. And then, so this is another play that's like, these are the things that they're going to make a difference. But right at the end of the second period, Beecher makes a really nice play driving down the wing and hits Granowitz in front, who tips a shot past to Ritter to make it 6-3. And Beecher's quietly been making a lot of those plays lately. And Granowitz hasn't played in, I can't even tell you, I don't know if he's played in 2022, to be honest with you, probably in that tech game because everyone had to play in that tech game. But
no, that wasn't, you know, in 2022.
No, it wasn't. It was, you know, pretty close to it. But I would say that's the last time he played off the top of my head. But he drives the net, gets a stick, and tips a shot in. And, you know, we didn't mention the LaPointe goal from Friday, but getting goals from guys like LaPointe and Granowitz, I think, are a big deal because these are the depth guys that we talked about. And when you know, somebody runs dry, or, you know, you don't get, you get a good matchup from a defensive standpoint, and you, you know, the best chances are going to come from your like depth lines, guys like Lambert, Beecher making a play, Granowitz, LaPointe, you know, having them had the experience of putting the puck in the net and being in those situations and having that confidence, I think could come a long way down the stretch for Michigan.
Yeah. Well, it was only a couple of weeks ago we were talking about lists of guys who needed to step up, and I listed a few in my last column, and I totaled this up for my piece today, where the guys that I had listed combined, I think, for 5 goals between the two games this weekend. I mean, it was like Sam Moskevich, Bortolo, Luke Hughes, Granowitz, I think LaPointe, maybe Lambert in there too. But all the guys that we said needed to step up have, for the most part, stepped up this weekend. And now we'll just see if that continues forward.
Yeah, and that's kind of, it makes you, you know, we'll get into the Ohio State series in the next segment, but it kind of gives you a little more confidence going into that series, because when a lot of these guys who are at the Olympics now were out for the juniors game against Michigan Tech, like that was a 0-0 game with a bunch of like puck fumbles and missed breakaways. And, you know, Tech's probably a better team than Michigan State for sure. But, you know, Michigan had their chances in that game and just couldn't put anything away. And there's a little bit of like, you know, PTSD where you're coming into this series of like, I hope that somebody can figure out ways to score. Well, everyone figured out ways to score. And now you look at it and you're thinking, you know, this is a good team despite their superstars.
Yeah. You still have plenty of talent out there, and you've still got a collection of guys who are playing really well right now. And that includes the goaltender, who's now up to a 949 save percentage since Christmas over an 11 game stretch. And Michigan has not lost in regulation in those 11 games. So,
I mean, they have had a lot of really good performances, but you could argue that he's been maybe even their best player.
I mean, I totaled this up today. They've got, I believe, a plus 25 goal differential over those last 11 games as a team. So they're playing really well right now, and they're going to need to keep doing that, because the path to everything they want to accomplish is only going to get harder from here.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. You can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to...
Well, if you're looking for more interesting, or I would say games that included uncertainty of outcome, it might have been better to watch other series in the Big Ten this weekend than the Michigan-Michigan State series. As we alluded to, that was not particularly close. That is not true of the other two series, though. We had some debate as to what the ideal outcome would be in the Minnesota-Ohio State series. I think that it was, you know, pretty close to wanting it to be, you know, 3-3 or 4-2 or something in that sense. I was probably wanting Minnesota to win at least one game, and they did on Friday. It was a really tight game. I actually got to put it on at Yost in the third period. Ohio State came charging back and trying to score, but they couldn't, and Minnesota wins 3-2. And then we watched the game together on Saturday night, and that was never really close. Minnesota just beat the pants off of them. And, I was a little surprised at that because I don't think you were really expecting Minnesota to look like actual Minnesota. And you were sort of expecting Ohio State to put up a little bit more of a fight when they actually still had a shot to win the conference.
Well, this was a good news, bad news weekend. Good news is there's only one competitor left for the conference title. Bad news is that team is in a pretty good spot. And so Minnesota did a lot of help for Michigan in terms of KOing Ohio State. Because as you look at the standings, Ohio State's done. Like, let's be frank here. They have, you know, they could in theory finish ahead of Michigan, I guess. But finishing ahead of both Michigan and Minnesota seems extremely unlikely at this juncture, given what they've backed themselves into. Because, right, Ohio State now, number one, has only two games remaining compared to the other two that have four games left.
Right.
And they are now 3 points back of Michigan and one point back of Minnesota. So let's say Ohio State sweeps Michigan this weekend, which doesn't seem likely, but could happen. Michigan could still leapfrog back over them with 4 points against Notre Dame while Ohio State sits at home. Meanwhile, even if Ohio State sweeps Michigan, all Minnesota's got to do is get two regulation wins against Wisconsin and Penn State in four games against those two teams. Like, the math just seems real bad for Ohio State at this point, and they've got nobody but themselves to blame. They had a home series against a shorthanded Gophers team, and they blew it. So Buckeyes are done.
And, yeah, even if they get a sweep or a split, it's a lot different. Like, it's probably not still great odds for them, but it's...
Well, if they get a split last weekend, then they're 5 points up of Minnesota, still not in a particularly great spot, but they would, you know, they could still say, okay, if we sweep Michigan, then that puts some pressure on Minnesota, and they would have a much better shot of finishing ahead of Michigan, obviously, with the head-to-head, all that kind of stuff. So, instead, they're in a very undesirable position.
And if you're wondering what happened to Notre Dame, so are we, because we watched some of their first game on Saturday.
We weren't watching it. We were just watching the shot counter.
Well, that's probably a little more accurate. But at one point, Wisconsin had one shot and one goal. I think they got up to three shots and two goals.
Yeah. And then I think three goals and five shots. And maybe four goals
and eight shots.
Yeah, it might have been 10 shots. It was bad. They had, I think, total 14 shots, and they had five goals, one of which was an empty netter, but still bad.
And Notre Dame probably, I'm guessing, got goalied in a way. I mean, they also gave up some bad goals, but it wasn't like
Notre Dame finished with, I think, 41 shots.
Right. So they peppered, I don't even know who was in net.
I think it was Moe.
Well, they rhyme, so you're probably pretty close to being right either way. So,
if you just don't enunciate the first...
O is in net, yeah.
Yeah, the first letter, then it's where it pays to be Jim Leland, and you just mumble. And
probably right, anyway.
You can claim you got it right no matter what.
So Notre Dame is 10 points back of Michigan. They max at 12 points, including having to beat Michigan twice. They do go to East Lansing, so... Getting a lot of points this weekend is probably high, but if Michigan gets a win against Ohio State, then Notre Dame is not winning the conference either. What do you think of Ohio State and Notre Dame making the tournament? Do you think that the Big Ten can still sneak four teams in, or is one of these teams going to get cannibalized out?
I'd like to say one thing first. You know who has a smoking jacket? Jim Leland probably does.
Yeah. I mean...
That you know guy smokes cigars in the dugout.
You know what you need is a Jim Leland smoking jacket, like one with like his faces on it, and not just one, but plural. You know how you can buy those T-shirts with like somebody's head on it a bunch of times? You need like a slick robe smoking jacket of Jim Leland, preferably smoking.
When Jim Leland did the moonwalk in the locker room after they won the division in 2013, that's one of the highlights of my life. But anyway,
was it better than OBJ's moonwalk last night?
OBJ tore his ACL, so we're not going to discuss anything about him right now, other than sending him our regards.
He also did the moonwalk before that when he scored a touchdown.
Yeah, he got to do something with a healthy knee. Notre Dame. Two things about them. Number one, the stakes for Michigan. A regulation win this weekend eliminates both Ohio State and Notre Dame. So we'll just say that first off.
Which guarantees a semifinal home game.
Probably against guess who? Or the, you know, a quarterfinal home game, that is, at worst. And then semifinal home game against, you know, someone who's pretty good. But
whoever doesn't win the conference is probably going to get good old Michigan State.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the Notre Dame and Ohio State. So if we look at the pairwise right now, there's probably, I think, eight teams that are basically a lock, and they're a lock in the Roberto Clemente way, which is sort of like if your season just totally ends, right? You don't win any more games. Like I talk about this at the Hall of Fame. The Roberto Clemente threshold means you could die tomorrow and you would still be voted in the Hall of Fame. Okay. These eight teams could lose every game the rest of the season and still get into the tournament. Michigan, Minnesota State, Denver, Western, Minnesota, Quinnipiac, Duluth, and St. Cloud. Those eight, I think there's nothing that can stop them from getting in.
You think the break is between St. Cloud and UMass?
Well, there's a bit of a break in RPI, and then UMass has got the East Conference stuff where St. Cloud is going to be protected by being in the NCHC.
I see.
The next three, UMass, Tech, and NoDak, I think are all really close to feeling good because UMass is probably going to win their conference. So those top 11, I think, are all sitting pretty solid. It's then after that where I think more of the bubble action is because you have spots 12, 13, 14, 15 before the automatic qualifier picks in. Obviously, if you're 15th, you're also at risk of the automatic qualifier, right? Like it's probably not going to happen, but some terrible ECAC team could win that tournament and suddenly they have to get in, right?
Yeah, Cornell. I mean, I used to say if you're 13th, you're probably in the tournament, but below that,
The NCHC, I don't think there's any team that's going to win that conference tournament that isn't already going to be in, right?
Okay.
The rebuilt CCHA, I think the only team you'd be watching out for is probably Bemidji. I don't see anyone else that's winning that conference tournament.
Well, I mean, that's the random part of it, right? Like you just get Bowling Green gets hot or whatever.
Sure. So the four spots before the 16th, which is absolutely an automatic qualifier, right now are Ohio State, Notre Dame, Northeastern, and Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ohio State and Notre Dame, they're 12th and 13th. It's in one of those spots where Ohio State definitely entering this weekend has got to feel like they're in a little bit of a, you know, uncertain terrain where if you get swept again, you put yourself more at risk. And then, you know, hopefully you then win your quarterfinal matchup and then maybe you lose in the semis. You're probably still in, but they're not in a lock position in my mind. They didn't play a tough non-conference at all. And if Notre Dame slides down the stretch, I mean, the Big Ten, I don't know about this year's Big Ten because Minnesota did not post a particularly impressive non-conference. Ohio State didn't post a particularly impressive non-conference. I mean, Penn State's win over North Dakota is one of the better wins in the non-conference that the Big Ten has. I mean, the Big Ten has the advantage of being a Western conference, and the Western conference is just beating the living daylights out of the Eastern conferences, so that helps. But I don't think they're in yet. We'll see what follows, right? And so Michigan can definitely use that as a little bit of motivation, right? You can place your rival a little bit more on the bubble by virtue of sweeping this weekend.
So the other thing that does come into play when you're looking at these teams is you see that like Northeastern is 14, Massillon is 16, Providence is 17, and BU is 18. So if UMass were to not win their conference, or even if they, you know, beat one of those teams in the final,
yeah,
I mean by conference, I mean conference tournament, then you're going to be logging wins for those teams at, you know, 18 through 14 or 15. And so then with that happens, especially if say Ohio State, you know, loses in their semifinal game, which is like a one game playoff, it's not like, you know, then all of a sudden now you get these teams that are building 3, 4, 5 wins, and you know, one of those teams is going to probably make the final with UMass. So that's like the scary part is when you're right on that edge, you have to, You know, Michigan's been there, what, those 2 or 3 years. The last couple of years they weren't, but you know, even the year that they, the COVID year when it ended in March of 20, like they probably, they needed to win that Ohio State game in Columbus to get in.
Yeah, probably. So, the thing that I'm intrigued about is some of those teams, right? Because if you have Ohio State and Notre Dame slide a little bit at the end, which is hypothetical, then who's going to jump in? And like Boston U is the one that I think is the team that I'm like, do not let this team get in the tournament.
Right. And they've done that so many times. I mean, Michigan faced them when on their Final Four run. And you're just like, come on, this is like the four seed in our because they, I think they beat, was it Cornell?
They beat Cornell, who was that year's Quinnipiac.
Right. And then Michigan's in the Elite Eight against them. And you're like, okay, well, here's seven first round picks again. And
well, it's not that level of talent, but they've got some players.
No,
and the big story is that they're absolutely, well, that year they had a lot of players. This year, it's not, this year it's not quite the same, but they always have some talent. And the big story is that they're just absolutely on fire right now. They were 4-9-2 at the end of November, and now they're 16-10-3. And they, if you just look at since the end of November, you want to know who their one regulation loss is to? The USNTDP.
Which doesn't even count.
They otherwise have two losses, overtime against Vermont and a shootout loss against Boston College. So
yeah, they're the new North Dakota.
They're in a weak conference, yes, but that team is on fire. And that's the kind of squad that you're like, oh, I don't know about that. About, you know, drawing them into your hypothetical regional. When I was preparing some notes for this, I was looking at the top seeds, right? To just look at, okay, where's the positioning? I mean, I think Michigan's in a pretty good spot to get a one seed right now because this is why. They, if you look at their records among the top 10 teams in the pairwise, their record against the other top 10 teams, right, that they faced this year. Mm-hmm. Michigan sits at 6-2-3, and I'm counting all overtime shootout games as ties. Mm-hmm. So Michigan's at 6-2-3. Minnesota State's at 6-2-1, and Denver is at 6-2 even. Nobody else is well above 500. I think there's only one other team that's even above 500. And
yeah, Duluth is like 6-5-2.
6-5-2. Everyone else is either 500 or way, way, way below that. And Michigan has that just crucial, crucial win over Minnesota State, which
Quinnipiac is 500, though.
Comes, yeah. Yeah, Quinnipiac, they are this year's Minnesota State, which is what I always used to say about Minnesota State, was Minnesota State never played anybody. They'd get in the tournament. They were the ultimate paper tiger. This year, Minnesota State loaded up their non-con and actually played some teams, and I think is pretty darn good. But Quinnipiac, they are 0-0 against top 10 teams in pairwise. And they are 25-3-3 on the year, which looks really good. But if you do any digging, you find that it's just totally a strength of schedule situation. They're 0-1-1 against Clarkson, the only decent ECAC team. They had two OT games against American International. They're 1-1 against North Dakota. They beat Northeastern, who isn't even in the tourney field. And they tied a terrible Boston College team. So basically, they've played four games against teams currently in the tourney, and they're 1-2-1 in those four games, and 22-0-5 against everybody else.
And if didn't Arizona State do something like that a few years ago?
Yeah,
where they kind of gamed the system and got two or three seed.
Yeah, the Caroline Wozniacki world number one thing. If you just play the right games, it doesn't matter how you do in those games. And if you drill further, Quinnipiac, because they're, if you haven't been following this, have set, I believe, already the all-time shutouts record in a season for a college hockey team. And it's all built off of these ECAC teams who are just incapable of scoring. They have allowed 32 goals total this season, Quinnipiac has, in 31 games, which is pretty good. But
it's hard to lose games when you get a goal game.
18 of the 32 goals they've allowed have come in just 8 games against non-ECAC teams. So they've allowed 14 goals in 23 games, and then they've allowed 18 goals in 8 games against teams that actually have a pulse. on offense. And that's kind of the big difference. And here's the big thing. Those eight games against non-ECAC teams, they include heavy hitters like Sacred Heart and Holy Cross. Like, we're not talking about Notre Dame here. We're talking about non-ECAC teams who are still very bad. It's just they know how to possess the puck and shoot at the net. You know, their forwards are not facing backwards when they're up the ice. Like, it, my conclusion of this is I do not respect the ECAC at all. And if there's,
you know, we're going to get goalied by an ECAC team.
Yeah,
now,
I know.
Right?
Like,
now you've said this.
I want Quinnipiac, you know, put up a sign. We want Quinnipiac in our draw, and then we're going to get them, and then Michigan will lose 1-0. So that's how it goes. But that's one team that I don't believe in at all. The other ones, I mean, like UMass is in an Eastern Conference and has gotten pantsed both times they faced anyone not in the East. So
both times they faced Michigan.
Yeah, was one of the two teams.
Yeah.
So that's a team I'd love to see. St. Cloud is got the profile of the 5 seed in the basketball tournament that loses to the 12 as like, yeah, we're the 7th best team in a power conference, right? Like St. Cloud is 3-5-3 against the top teams. They're way down the pecking order in the NCHC, but they have a good pairwise because they're in that conference. That seems to me to be a team you would look at and say, oh, they might not be as good as meets the eye. And
well,
by the way, our eternal rivals, Michigan Tech, have zero wins against top 10 teams in the pairwise. Just putting that out there.
You're just like continuing this feud, aren't you? Like you're just stoking it because you're like, I bet those four people listen to the Hockey Cast.
They got a chance to beat a top 10 pairwise team missing like 8 players. And they didn't do it.
How many goals did they score in that game?
They scored 0 goals.
Okay. That's probably not getting it done. You were reading
also,
to me that...
last thing I want to say on this topic. Apparently, everyone has played Nodak. So when I was sketching this out, and I was like, okay, who have they played in the top 10? Every team in the top 10, basically, besides Michigan, has played North Dakota. Not just the NCHC teams, but all these other teams have played North Dakota, too. North Dakota's played everybody.
Do they just not play a conference schedule or
I don't know. Minnesota played them. Quinnipiac somehow got them on the schedule. Obviously Penn State got them on the schedule and they also played all the NCHC teams. So I was like originally like, okay, Denver, they went 1-1 against Nodak, who's not top 10, but I'll just put that little asterisk there for knowledge. And then I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop doing this because everyone's played Nodak. Everyone is like 1-1 against Nodak. It's not useful anymore.
I just wanted to say you were reading to me, the way the pairwise broke down on Saturday when we were talking about this. And you said, if, you know, it ended today and, you know, you just seeded based on how the draw was right now, Michigan would get the number one overall drawing AIC, which is the automatic qualifier from Atlantic Hockey. And then their 2, 3, or 8, 9 overall would be St. Cloud and UMass. And I was like, sign me up for that right now. Like, let's lock those in. And, you know, Michigan has to beat 2 of those 3 teams to make it to Boston. And I mean, anything can happen as we've seen in way too many hockey tournaments, but that's about as comfortable of a draw as you feel like you could get.
Yeah. I think that is the dream scenario where you play AIC and then you get a team you handled very easily. Or, again, like the 4th or 5th best NCHC team as your possible.
That isn't Duluth. Like, Duluth doesn't count. Like, if you put Duluth in that, like,
well,
because
they're not the 5th best NCHC team.
But they're also Duluth. Like, I'm not, like, last year they COVIDed us, right? I mean, like, it wasn't proven to them, but, like, we're attributing that to the overtime factor.
Then they played the Easter Epic against whoever that was in the next round.
Nodak?
Yeah. And
where it looked like a
beer
league game at the end.
Yeah.
So we will do a little more pairwise stuff as the season continues on and it becomes more relevant. We'll just touch a little bit on Ohio State next, just because Michigan plays them. Maybe this is just feelings ball and that happens a lot in sports, but I feel better a little bit going into that weekend after watching Michigan convert and score a bunch of goals against a good goalie and, you know, not a good team, but and then having Minnesota or Ohio State play Minnesota, who is, you know, on par with Michigan talent wise and style wise and everything. And, you know, they had to, Minnesota had to hang on to the one game, but then they just blitzed them the second time. And that was in Columbus. So coming into the series, we'll go through the numbers after you give your little intro, but I'm feeling a lot better.
I mean, to me, this is a situation where, look, Michigan is battling it out with another team in Minnesota, and Minnesota just upped the ante, right? Yep. They just shoved a bunch of chips into the middle of the table, and now Michigan has to do the same. Minnesota had a shorthanded roster, and they just went and dispatched Ohio State on the road, which Michigan doesn't even have to do. So if Michigan wants to win the title, we can't claim, you know, any of that stuff, right? About, oh, this happened or this happened or this happened. No, it was common opponents. Minnesota just did that. Now you got to go do it. And then maybe the next weekend you can whine about playing Notre Dame or whatever while they play Wisconsin. But the big thing I think about this weekend is Michigan's got to exit this weekend in first place in the Big Ten. If you go into the last weekend hoping Wisconsin's going to bail you out, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Because that's also in Minneapolis. They already went to Madison.
Yeah. So I think by far the best chance to get help from the from the Gophers is Penn State. That's this weekend. That's in Happy Valley. That's your chance to get help. If you could sweep Ohio State and let's say Minnesota loses a game in a shootout, something like that, right? The drops 2 points. Then you are 4 points up going into the final weekend, and then a regulation win against Notre Dame does it. In that situation, then you're the clear favorite. But there's a lot of moving parts here.
I also think that Michigan has is the tiebreaker points percentage, or is it, well, points percentage won't matter at that point, but is it regulation wins? I believe that is also one of the tiebreakers. And Michigan has one more than Minnesota right now. So it has been in the past, I know, when they've done seeding a few years ago. So Michigan has 14 right now and Minnesota has 13. So if they stay even with Minnesota in that regard in the next four games, Michigan would then have that tiebreaker. They'd also have the season series tiebreaker, if I remember correctly, too. Because they have taken more points. Because they've taken, I believe, 7 points. Off the Gophers.
Two teams are tied. Ties shall be broken according to the following procedure. In the event of an unbalanced schedule due to cancellation of games, the conference champion and seeding shall be determined by regular season points percentage in all Big Ten games, with ties broken according to the following procedure. A. Seeding amongst tied teams shall be determined by the team with the best regular season winning percentage against the other tied teams. Now, it doesn't talk about regulation there, because technically speaking, the teams had the same winning percentage against each other because they both won two games. But one team's win, one of their two wins was in overtime.
Overtime, yeah.
B. If not determined by A, seeding amongst tied team shall be determined by the team with the best regular season winning percentage in all Big Ten games, which if we look at the standings right now, both teams have 14 wins, but Michigan's got, again, it doesn't specify regulation there.
Yeah.
These Big Ten, if not determined by A or B, here it is. Seeding amongst tied teams shall be determined by the greater number of Big Ten regular season regulation wins.
There you go.
There it is.
So it's Michigan should hold most of the tiebreakers over Minnesota.
Yes.
And that's pretty key. And like you mentioned, they go to Penn State this weekend. Nate Wells has always talked about how that's a house of horrors for them. I mean, we've watched games there down the stretch and that Minnesota's blown some games. So it's certainly possible for them to drop games. And I mean, there's even the argument that it's tougher sometimes to go to Penn State than Ohio State, just because of the way that,
oh yeah. Cause so Penn State has fans.
Well, yeah. And it's just, you know, Michigan's
that building is way more intense than Ohio State.
So let's look at Ohio State a little bit. They're 12th in pairwise, as you mentioned. They're 25th in Corsi, so they're pretty average at best at keeping the puck. They're 17% on the power play, which is not
great.
Great. And they're 77% on the penalty kill, which is also not very good, especially against a power play for Michigan that is kind of rounding into form even without say all of their stars.
Yeah, that remains the big matchup in this one, is the power play for Michigan against the penalty kill for Ohio State.
Yeah, they have three drafted skaters. And if you remember from the previous series, Michigan didn't get many power plays. So, no. Of course, they also played on a slush pot. So is there even an advantage there? But Ohio State has three drafted skaters, and none of them are particularly highly drafted. And two of them, I believe, are seniors. So it's not like you're getting these high impact freshmen.
Mason Lowry is a second rounder. And okay, their leading assist guy as a defenseman. He's a good player.
And they do have four skaters that are scoring at 0.75 points per game or higher. So they do have some individual players that are contributing good seasons.
They have a good offense, but they don't have like a lot of go-to guys you circle. They've got a lot of guys that chip in goals. Georgi Merkulov continues to have the rabbit's foot. 18 goals on 47 shots. I've never seen someone have more than 15 goals in any level of hockey on a shooting percentage of 38%.
Jonas Downskoy.
There was the year that William Karlsson scored 40 some goals on 25%, but 18 goals on 38%. What in the world?
That's some 3-point shooting there. And then the last guy that we got to bring up is probably arguably their best player. Jacob Dobish in net has a 2.16 GAA and a 0.934 save percentage. That's pretty good.
Well, if you go back to my season preview, I had Ohio State near the bottom of the league because they were really bad last year. And if you want to know why teams often improve in the NHL, and you know how we always trace the Calder the Jack Adams for Coach of the Year in the NHL to the team that got the best improvement in goaltending, it's this case study, right? Yeah. Ohio State got a lot better because their save percentage as a team jumped from 893 to 932 from really, really bad to really, really good. And goaltending is the position that can swing everything, right? The rest of your roster can stay exactly the same. And if you go from 893 to 932, everything changes. And they've had a guy that's logged about 95% of their minutes in net, and that guy is Jakub Dobish. So I'm not giving Steve Rolick any credit other than recruiting Jakub Dobish. He's the reason. Like, it's as clear as it gets why they've suddenly improved a lot. So he's a really good player. I mean, I didn't think watching that first series against Ohio State that he was doing anything really special. I mean, he had some good saves, but I didn't sit there and be like, wow, we can't score on that guy.
Yeah.
But maybe it'll happen this weekend. It's all random. He's a really good player. The one thing that's weird about him is that he's been pulled a lot this season.
It has happened a few times.
He got pulled against Mercyhurst. He got pulled against Notre Dame. He then got pulled last week three times for a guy that's maybe going to win goaltender of the year. That seems kind of high to me.
I think Portillo's been pulled twice, and one of them wasn't really a pulling, meaning Friday.
Yeah.
Because, I think they pulled him in the first Minnesota game at Yost when it was kind of a blitzkrieg. But
yes.
You and I have talked about this a number of times, but we've said that Ohio State just doesn't look that great. They get good goaltending, like you've said. Their special teams numbers aren't elite. And when they were a good team a few years ago, they had a great penalty kill and a very good power play. And neither one is off the charts. They have guys, like you said, that chip in goals, but they don't have these stars that are just pouring them in. So I mean, they're a decent college hockey team, and that's probably why they're on the bubble. And Michigan is pretty locked into a one seed and hoping to get the number one overall.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State, I think overall you look at their team, I think they're a decent team that has one player shooting out of his mind, and that's a big factor. And they have a really good goalie, but I don't think otherwise they're a particularly intimidating team because the special teams aren't very good. There aren't a lot of players you really circle. I mean, here's what's going to happen this weekend. Same thing it always is. Ohio State's going to try and beat you up. They always do. It's going to be a physical series. I'm happy that the fans going to be back in the building this year for this matchup. It's always intense. Obviously, there was the game a few years ago with the bad hit on Dakota Raby where things kind of went awry and there was punches. And obviously, we all remember the Cutler-Martin fight that we keep talking about years later. a mythical event. So it's always fun in this matchup, and there's a lot on the line. So it should be a lot of fun, but Michigan's got to take care of business. I think they're the better team, but that doesn't always matter.
So lastly, before we let you go, we're going to talk a little bit of Olympics. There have been on the men's side, there have been three preliminary round games, and the U.S. has done pretty well. Michigan players overall have done decently well, especially only playing three games. Kent Johnson for Canada has three goals and an assist, and he's been plus three. Matty Beniers has a goal. Brendan Brisson has a couple goals. Owen Power with an assist and a plus two. Old friend Strauss Mann, who kind of gave up a stinker against Canada, I think, but has a 9.46 save percentage, a 2.0 GAA in his one game. And really old friend who is growing a beard, I guess. And you know, Steve Kampfer had a goal and a couple of assists and a plus three. He, I believe, is also wearing a letter for Team USA.
I don't know off the top of my head.
We'll go with he is.
Yeah, the man goal against Canada was one of those, oh boy, goals right off the bat. And then he was actually pretty good after that. So, you know, it evens out or whatever. But I would think they're going to ride him the rest of the way. Tonight are the quarterfinals, which are all matchups we mostly don't really care about. I mean, there seems to be...
So who's the U.S. gets what? The winner of Slovakia and Germany?
Yes, that's correct.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then who's their semifinal game against, I mean, that got a bye?
Either, well, Sweden is the one with the bye, but Sweden has to play Canada in the quarterfinal.
Okay.
Canada was playing China in the 5-12 tonight.
You don't think that China morning. Has a chance?
No, I don't.
Even so, with Brandon Yip?
You know, that'll be Canada, Sweden, and whoever wins that, it's going to be a good team. I thought watching U.S. Canada, I thought it was a pretty even game overall. I thought Canada's goaltending from Pasquale or whatever his name is was really bad. That can't happen again. Either they go to someone new or I don't know, he plays better, but they can't win a gold medal with that goaltending. And I thought that the U.S. with I think the youngest roster in the tournament was just a lot faster. And I thought Claude Julien, the coach for Canada, was just wasting his time putting out these guys on the power play number one who just don't have the same level of skill, right? They might have the physicality and the other intangibles, but I mean, put out Hosang, put out McTavish, put out Kent Johnson, put out Power. Like, I'm sorry, those guys have more skill. And when you're on the power play, ride with the skill guys when that's your opportunity. And him not doing that was very strange to me, but I'd love to see a Canada US rematch there. Obviously, I think, you know, Russia and Finland, I think, are going to be pretty good. I think we're going to see one of those two teams in the gold medal game against somebody. So it's been interesting. And then obviously we should plug the Wednesday night game, which is the gold medal on the women's side, Canada and the U.S. in the rematch. Canada won in their prelim game that I thought was pretty even. And it was kind of the reverse of the men's game, an even game. But this time it was Canada that came out on top. And that's one of the great rivalries in all of sports, because they see each other in every major tournament. Every game is always really close. The last number at the Olympics and the World Championships have gone to overtime or to shootout. So it's going to be a great game. You hope so. I mean, that's what the history has been.
One more shout out on Team USA. Michigan native and Wolverine villain Andy Mealy from Not That Miami from back when I was in school has a goal and three assists, 4 points in three games. And it's kind of cool to see a guy like that who, you know, we watched play against Michigan. Well, I did. I mean, you were young and
Hobie Baker winner.
Yeah. And not really have a great NHL career. I think he played a little bit anyway,
15 games.
Yeah. But he's still playing hockey and found his way onto the team and is, had a nice goal, although I would say that you might say Pasquale didn't play it really well, but it was nice to see him finish a goal there. So It will be interesting, like you said, the next couple of nights. What, tonight is the...
All those quarterfinal games.
Quarterfinals.
None
and
of them
the women's semifinal?
No, the women's are already done.
Women, right. The women's... See, the times are just the worst. It's either like 8 a.m. or like 11 p.m. But
yeah.
So tonight is the quarterfinals. Tomorrow morning is the U.S.?
No.
Man, all right. I'm going to try to like just give up time and clocks. Well, you said there are no days anymore, right? Maybe there are no more hours.
No, either. U.S. is tomorrow night, Tuesday night at...
Okay. At like 11.
11, yeah.
Yeah.
And right. then those semifinals go all through the night. Sweden, presumably against Canada, will be Wednesday morning at around 8. And then the winner of that will presumably play the United States in a semifinal matchup that would be presumably Thursday night or Friday morning.
I see.
But I would assume they'll give them the Thursday night slot, especially if it's US-Canada.
That would make sense. All right. Anything else left for this hockey cast? We kind of went a little bit long in the second segment, but we had a lot of kind of random hockey stuff to cover.
Ben Myers from Minnesota has 2 goals and 2 assists for 4 points in the U.S., so he's been pretty good, too.
Well, we'll probably see him in the next month or so, I would guess, somewhere.
Probably. Thank you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.16 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week where we will have flight tracking data watching the Olympians fly home from China to make sure they're in South Bend.